Hey guys, and welcome back to Take 2 of Episode 3 of Underrated. This is a podcast where we look at films we believe are underrated, generally disliked, or simply forgotten. I'm Gabriel Green, and here's my co-host, James Hamrick. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. Ready to re-go at it for a second time.
Yeah, we got in about 2 minutes, and then my computer completely crashed out of the blue. I'm glad it didn't happen like an hour in, though. That would have made me pretty mad, but all's good. So today we will be reviewing Jack Reacher. It's a 2012 film by director Christopher McQuarrie. But before we get into that, have you seen any cool movies lately?
I actually haven't really seen any new movies since we last recorded. I saw Suicide Squad again in the theater.
Oh, come on, man.
But
don't make me find a new co-host.
I'm sorry. I'm ready to talk about it. What about you? Have you seen anything new?
Yeah, I saw Hell or High Water by writer-director David McKenzie. Haven't seen any of his other films. I really liked it. It was a really solid film. Kind of a modern Western thriller, family drama kind of thing. You know, it had some really great acting. Chris Pine and Ben Foster played these two brothers who are on a bank robbing spree. Rooster Cogburn, or Jeff Bridges, is chasing them. And the whole cast had really great chemistry with each other. Pine and Foster were really believable as these two kind of rough redneck brothers. And Jeff Bridges, I don't know his co-star's name, I really should, but they had really, really great chemistry together. And a lot of surprising humor that you wouldn't think of in this kind of film. And it's just really well directed. And it paints this really interesting portrait of kind of poverty in mid-Texas. I think it takes place around Midland. I don't remember if it was present or like in the 90s. But it feels kind of like old and decaying, and yet there's this kind of nostalgia toward it. It's really interesting. It felt very realistic.
I definitely want to see it. I went back and watched the trailer. I think it looks pretty cool. And I like the cast a lot. I think Ben Foster is a super underrated actor.
Yeah.
I saw him. I loved him as a sharpshooter in 310 to Yuma.
Uh-huh.
Like, very little to do, maybe in terms of just like lines of dialogue, but he was really good with what he was given. And he was really good in Lone Survivor as well.
Yeah, I first noticed him in 310 to Yuma. I guess after that, all of his roles seemed very subdued because he was so over the top in that film. But yeah, he's had a lot of smaller side roles in big projects recently. I'm glad to see that happen because he is very good. And I also really want to see Kubo and the Two Strings. What are your thoughts on Laika?
I really like what I've seen. I haven't seen all of their movies. I never ended up seeing Paranorman. But
you're fine.
The one that I really did like a lot was Coraline. We were on vacation when we watched it, and it was kind of a lazy day, and decided to throw that on just to pass the time, and I ended up really enjoying it.
I think Coraline is probably my favorite from them. I was a little disappointed when I first saw it because I had just read the book, and the book is significantly creepier than the movie is. I think they tone it down a bit too much, in my opinion. I do want to see it again without the book kind of clouding my judgment. Not a big fan of Paranorman. I think it's just kind of cynical, and I don't care just for how it tells its story, but it's definitely got some beautiful animation. Kubo looks pretty gorgeous, so I'm definitely looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it looks different from their other kind of movies, I think. Like, I mean, you can still tell that it's part of the same team, but just in terms of its tone, I think it looks a lot more unique.
Yeah, it's a very lush and kind of really anime-like, which I don't know what I'm talking about because I don't watch anime, but I think it looks like anime. The film we're reviewing today is by director Christopher McQuarrie. Have you seen any of his films?
The only one I've actually seen is Jack Reacher. I've never seen his first one or the Mission Impossible that he did.
Okay. Yeah, he's only made 3 films, of which I only really like 2, but he's with those 2 films, he's become one of my favorite directors. His first film was, I think, back in like 2000, The Way of the Gun. And it's okay. It's a decent crime thriller. It's very unique, but it's also very dark and nihilistic and not my type. And then when I saw Jack Reacher, that and Mission Impossible 3 are incredible action films. I think some of the best, just as far as the artistry and just pure skill behind the camera he has. I think he's really going places. What are your thoughts on the Mission Impossible franchise?
I have not seen all of them. I saw the first one and thought it was pretty good. Saw the second one and was not a fan at all, even though I really like John Woo. I skipped the third one, which ends up being a lot of people's favorites. It wasn't even intentional. They just didn't have it at the place that I was renting movies from. And then I watched, which one is it? The one before Rogue Nation.
Ghost Protocol.
Ghost Protocol. And I really, really like Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, I've seen them all. I'm a huge Tom Cruise fan. Well, I like him like post-2000 or when he's, I think we kind of made a comeback where he's been starring in a lot of these, I think, really quality action films recently. And so I like the first Mission Impossible okay. I think it's kind of confusing and doesn't make much sense. And then Mission Impossible 2 is, yes, that. Not very good.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible 3 is excellent. It's a J.J. Abrams directorial debut, and he brings his kind of signature intensity and just, and then also he brings a lot of humanity to the character that just wasn't there in the previous two films. Like, you actually care about him a lot in these movies, and I really appreciate that. And I think Brad Bird did a great job with Ghost Protocol. It's not my favorite. I think it's a little hollow dramatically, which is kind of odd considering it's directed by Brad Bird. It's really gorgeous and slickly directed. I think the action set pieces are pretty great, but there's really not a lot of substance to it. Macquarie's Mission Impossible 5, Rogue Nation, that one is kind of, it changes back and forth between that and Mission Impossible 3 for my favorite in the franchise. I like Rogue Nation just because of how well directed it is. Then I like also like Mission Impossible 3 for how emotional it is and how much it makes us care about this character. So it kind of changes back and forth every day. The interesting thing is they're bringing McQuarrie back for Mission Impossible 6, which is the first time the director will return to the franchise. So far, I think, probably intentionally, they've brought on a new director for each film. What do you think about bringing a director back?
I think, I don't think it's going to affect the movie. I think the movie's going to be great because I really like Jack Reacher, and I take your word for it that Rogue Nation is really, really good. So I think the movie will still be really good, but I can't help but kind of wish that they were going to give it to maybe a different director, one who hadn't done as much stuff yet.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I really like the idea of changing directors and then kind of choosing your favorite movie based on the director. I don't know.
Yeah, it helps keep a franchise fresh and exciting when every film is directed in a very different style often.
Yeah, and sometimes when you bring the same director back, I don't know, it seems like they compete with themselves. I don't know, I just think of whenever Sam Mendes came back for Spectre after he did Skyfall. And
I like Spectre better, actually.
You like, oh, wow.
I don't like Bond as a franchise that much. And so I like Spectre because it's a gorgeous film with great action sequences. And Skyfall bored me to tears.
Oh, well, I loved Skyfall. It's probably my favorite. Between that and Casino Royale is my favorite. And Spectre just kind of seemed there to me.
Yeah.
But
maybe it's because I can't stand the character of Bond. So, like with Casino Royale, when they try to delve and tell his backstory, I hate him as a human being. So that doesn't help if I spend a lot of time with him moping around kind of thing.
Gotcha. But maybe it'll end up, maybe this Mission Impossible 6, I'm sure it'll end up still being good. Yeah. Though, so I'll still look forward to it.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping they would like hire like Wes Ball, the director of the Maze Runner series, which are like really incredibly well-directed films, even though they're YA. And while the story's not there, they're really well-directed, and I really wish he would kind of move up from that and start getting real big projects.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have more on your resume than just a YA franchise. I haven't seen those movies, actually, but I've heard they're actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I do want to review Maze Runner sometime on the show. I think the quality of that film is really underestimated just because it's YA and people ignore it for that. Well then, let's move into our main review of Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher is a ghost. Served in the military police. A brilliant investigator. Troublemaker, too. Then, 2 years ago, he disappears. You don't find this guy unless he wants to be found.
Excuse me, sir. There's a Jack Reacher here to see you.
Can I help you?
James Barr. say he shot 5 people. I don't believe he did.
What exactly are you saying?
He was framed.
What does an army cop do mostly?
What you do. With one minor difference. Every suspect was a trained killer.
What do we hope to find?
The truth.
The soldier is asking questions no one else would ask. Get the lawyer.
Helen?
No.
Helen, are you hurt?
Do I have to tell you how this works?
Do you think I'm a hero?
I am not a hero.
Lawyer's all yours.
On second thought,
I'd like to kill you. They want me to run. Then I'm gonna finish this.
You're a little rusty, Mr. Reacher.
I have nothing to lose. If you're smart, that scares you.
He doesn't care about the law. He doesn't care about proof. He only cares about what's right.
Out of the car!
The trailer gives away a bit too much, but it's still a really well-made trailer.
I was gonna say, I'm actually, maybe it's because I have such a dislike of whenever trailers show extended footage from the third act, but I don't think the movie or the trailer really does the movie justice. And then two, yeah, it gives away kind of a lot of the beats of the movie, like especially towards the end, because of what you've seen in the trailer. If you're watching the movie, it's like, well, this hasn't happened yet, and we're in the finale, so I'm assuming this is the finale.
Yeah. I want to give a spoiler warning before we get too deep into the review. If you haven't seen this film, go check it out. It's a really, if you like Tom Cruise, if you don't like Tom Cruise, go check it out. It's a really well-made thriller, but we will be spoiling it completely, so fair warning. Yeah, I really wish they hadn't shown that Rosamund Pike like getting kidnapped and all that. That doesn't happen till in the last like 30 minutes of the film. It's kind of ridiculous. Although the phone conversation between him and Cruise and Jai Courtney is epic.
Yeah.
Only Tom Cruise can get away with lines like that, though.
Yeah, I love that. The constant hang up and then call back. That was a good scene.
Well, Jack Reacher was released in 2012, had a budget of $60 million. It made back $218 million, so it was a decent hit. Starring Tom Cruise, Rosamund Pike, Jai Courtney, David Oelio, I think. I'm sorry, David, I don't know. Richard Jenkins and Robert Duvall and Werner Herzog, which is strange. You would not expect him in this film, but I want to talk about him later because he's awesome. And this is my pick. And I wanted to talk about this film because I've loved it ever since I first saw it. And then as I see more of McQuarrie's work, I really respect him as a director. I don't think he gets enough attention, especially for this film. And it only got like a 62% on Rotten Tomatoes, which that messes with my like entire faith in humanity. When a film this well made is kind of overlooked by the critics, this has actual quality to it. And so many like dumb action films that just have a couple of cool sequences and but no actual film craft are like praised. And then a film like this, which is beautifully directed and just really well crafted, is kind of forgotten. And that really irritates me. I don't know. It seems like sometimes that not only the modern audience, but the general like Rotten Tomato critic culture is when they see a film that's sold as like a popcorn film, they kind of turn off the part of their brain that actually analyzes film craft and just look for, oh, was it fun? Did it entertain me? And they don't actually pay attention to the actual craftsmanship behind sometimes. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think that this movie and, you know, a handful of others is kind of proof of that. And I remember, so whenever I first saw the trailer, I actually thought that was what it was going to be, was just this dumb action, fun popcorn movie. And so I sat down, and it was on Netflix, so I hit play, and that first scene with the sniper was so, I was like, wow, this isn't going to be just some dumb action movie. Like, that was a very well made but almost like unsettling opening. So when it was finished, I was like, you know what? I put it on just because I was bored and I want to be entertained. I was like, I'm actually going to pay attention because this actually might be a really good movie.
Yeah, it's pretty harrowing opening. The entire scene, just the sniper, and then it's shown twice, and it's just as horrifying each time because it's so well put together. And I think that's really thanks to McQuarrie's direction. He just builds the scene and then kind of explodes out of nowhere, and it's really shocking.
Yeah, it was very, very well done. Just with, you know, no music at all. We're just following the scope, and you know, the first time you see it, you don't really know what's happening. I mean, obviously you have a feeling that he's about to start opening fire, but he just ends up seeing like five different people, and the scope keeps moving across the screen, and then he goes back to that first victim in the first shot, and then the second one, and you're like, wow, this is a killer.
Yeah. And an interesting thing is they don't even try to make a mystery out of who the shooter is. Later on, they frame another man for the crime, but we see that it's actually Jai Courtney who did it. And I kind of respect the film for doing that, because it could have tried to make the whole film about the mystery of, is he actually guilty or not? But it doesn't even try to do that. It just tries to tell a story.
Yeah, I've never been a fan when movies do that. Whenever they make something a mystery when it's so obvious what it's going to be.
Uh-huh.
Like, I feel like if they just showed the hand, like the finger pulling the trigger and never the face, and they were like, you know, we think it's James Barr. Anybody who's seen a movie's, you know, they're just waiting for the reveal that he was framed.
Yeah.
So the idea that they're very straightforward with the audience, I do like that.
Yeah, it is a bold move because most films would not have done that. And I want to just highlight, before we go too far, just Caleb Deschanel, I believe is the cinematographer's name. And all of the visuals in this film are gorgeous. And I think thanks to just how Christopher McQuarrie just stages and frames these scenes, it's a really beautiful film. You know, there's not a wasted shot in the entire film. Every shot is dynamic and interesting, and there's always something cool happening or some interesting framing in every shot of the film. And I really respect that when a film actually makes its cinematography look like something rather than just the modern shaky cam era, which can be done well, but it's more often it's just a tool for an inexperienced filmmaker to use to cover that they have no clue what they're doing.
Yeah. I feel like you could probably tell, you can kind of tell the difference when a director starts using shaky cam, if they're using that because they actually want to use that for this movie, or if they're using that like because they can't set up a shot at all.
Yeah, very few directors can do shaky cam well. I think even Spielberg, I think when he does it, is pretty irritating for me. Paul Greengrass, the director of the Bourne films,
yeah,
it was really annoying in Supremacy, but I think he kind of got it down really well in the last two films that he directed. I think J.J. Abrams has an interesting style of how he does it, where he doesn't actually move the camera. He just sits behind the camera and shakes it and vibrates it. I don't know. Have you watched the special features for like Star Trek?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty cool because he just grabs the camera and it's on the guy's shoulder and just slightly vibrates it. So you get the shaky cam feeling the intensity with it while still having the shots beautifully framed and actually showing something.
Nice.
Yeah, and I wish more directors would do stuff like that instead of, I don't know. I mean, it really irritates me when you have bad shaky cam in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite director, Nolan. Like, well, maybe it wasn't so much shaky cam, but just really weird. Well, kind of shaky cam up close, especially in Batman Begins during the action scenes. And
yeah.
I was just not a fan of, as much as I love him and those movies, His action choreography and the way he films it has never really been to my taste.
Yeah, I think though he learns a lot more and improves in Inception and The Dark Knight Rises. I think the action is a lot better choreographed. It's actually shot very well, I think.
One of the things that I want to talk about the movie that I think kind of gets overlooked is just the writing in this movie is really good, and it's, you have the one-liners, you know, kind of like other action movies, but they're not stupid and cheesy puns, at least most of the time. Like, it's still an action movie in that it has these, like, the hero is constantly, he constantly has some sort of comeback or something to say during the fights or conversations, but it's not, like I said, it's not just stupid puns, and especially like the scene of them at the of him at the bar as he's talking to the girl that comes on to him. Like, he's got some really good back and forth. Like, there's some really funny lines. I watched it with friends, and we were laughing during the whole scene. And I think it could have just become, I don't know. I feel like there was a Schwarzenegger line that could have been thrown in there so easily and just had it become like some sort of like stereotypical kind of action movie. But it was an action movie that actually had some like smart humor.
It's a hilarious scene. Yeah, and Tom Cruise can play those lines really well, where he has like this complete and total confidence in his abilities, and so he'll just badmouth this big muscle guy who's trying to beat him up, and he just doesn't care because he knows what he can do, and he sells that even though he's only what 5'6" or something. He sells his command of the screen really well. That's why he's a star.
Yeah, I think Tom Cruise seems like he's one of the last of like the big kind of movie superstars, you know, where his name is what's attached to the movie.
Yeah, him and a couple of old guys now, like a Denzel Washington, Liam Neeson, are kind of coming there later on in their careers. It's interesting as the action stars, and I like that. I'm totally fine with that, but it is interesting now where the action stars are now 60 plus guys usually. Actually, I don't think Denzel's that old, but he's getting there.
I think he may be 60.
Really? Well, I got some good makeup in the Magnificent Seven trailers then.
Which looks great itself.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I really want to highlight the acting overall. I mean, Tom Cruise, he gets a lot of flack, and I guess it's over his involvement with Scientology. But if you separate his personal life, he is a phenomenal movie star. I think every film he's been in like the last 10 years has been really good that I know of. They did Valkyrie, Edge of Tomorrow, what else has he been in? The Mission Impossible films, Jack Reacher, Oblivion. I think he picks really interesting projects.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately for myself, I actually kind of bought into this whole, like, Tom Cruise is kind of just this overrated action star who can't do anything. And I ended up missing out on some movies when they came out. Like, I didn't go out and see Oblivion. I was in high school when that movie came out. And friends were going to see it, and it's like, I may catch it later when it comes out. I just was kind of in that whole Tom Cruise is in it, it's probably not going to be that great. And then it comes out, and you know, a lot of people like that. And then Edge of Tomorrow comes out, and it gets amazing reviews. And
yeah,
I think the only one that I could think of that came out somewhat recently with him in it that wasn't great was Night and Day.
It was okay. It wasn't great, though. Yeah. It wasn't as good as it could have been. He's always great. And I like how he has every scene I was watching with him with the different actors, like, man, they got great chemistry together.
Yeah.
They have great chemistry in this scene. And the one constant through all of that was Tom Cruise. I'm guessing he knows how to play really well off each actor's strength that he's working with. And also, he does all of his own stunts in these films. And you can tell because the directors, they shoot it in such a way where you always see his face, and especially in the car chase, which I'm going to talk about later, but
yeah,
there's a couple incredible shots that like the car is going like 50 miles an hour and the camera will like spin around it. He'll hit something and then the camera will zoom up to the window and you see his face in there. It's a really interesting way of shooting it. And he's a great driver.
Yeah. I know a lot of people kind of act like, yes, it's impressive when an actor can do their own stunts, but it really doesn't mean that much. And I think to me, it's obvious whenever it's the stunt guy doing the action, because yeah, it's reflected in the camera work. If you see in a fight scene or in an action scene or chasing or whatever, if they're consistently like kind of obscuring his face, you can kind of tell. And so
yeah, like,
I don't know. I do think it is cool when an actor can do all of their own stunts. So really, the director never really has to worry about what kind of camera, like what camera angles he's using, whether he has to obscure faces or not. It's all there to use.
Yeah, because like so much of the emotion of a scene is in the actor's face. And so when you can see their face and see when they're in pain or when they're like having the crap kicked out of them, it absorbs you that much more into the scene because you're not just shooting behind the actor's head.
Another actor that I thought did pretty good, or actually more than just pretty good, was David Oyelowo. I mean, his part wasn't like, it wasn't super demanding, but he still ended up being really good in the role.
Yeah. Yeah, he played the line as the, at first you think he's a good guy, but then he eventually you learn he's one of the villains, but he plays it really well to where it's believable that he could go either way.
Yeah, that was something I like, that I really have to commend both him and the script and the director, because, I mean, it's so often where when the twist is revealed and the movie is like, ah, it's been this guy, the audience most of the time is like, yeah, we know it's that guy. You know, you couldn't have been more obvious. I think a lot of directors don't get foreshadowing, and I'm to the point where, like, I'd be more than okay if they just quit trying to set up that, like, uh-oh, is this guy? Because most of the time it's like, yes, it's this guy.
Yeah.
And so whenever he's in the elevator, I kind of assume, like, once he steps in the elevator, that's whenever I'm like, oh my goodness, I think it is this guy.
Yeah, I forgot about that guy. I was looking at Richard Jenkins. I completely forgot about him.
Yeah, it's one of the few times in a movie where the movie's telling you or strongly hinting to you that it's this person, and that I believed it. Because usually when they're telling me it's one guy, I'm like, well, because you're telling me this, I'm going to assume this. But I was totally in on it. I was like, yeah, I mean, based upon what they said about her dad, like, you know, he's the bad guy. He's working in on this. And then whenever he picks up the phone and she's like, how much protection are you going to offer me if it's you? And she leaves. I was pretty much completely sold at that point that it was him. He was the bad guy. And then whenever David Oyelowo steps into the elevator, I'm like, wow, I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, the writing is really clever. And Richard Jenkins plays, he toes the line really perfectly where you can buy him either as the concerned father or the corrupt bureaucrat. He just plays it so well.
Yeah, that's another actor that is kind of peppered in here and there in movies, never as a huge character, but who's really good in everything he's in.
Yeah, he's always really dependable. And Jai Courtney. He's been in a lot of films recently, and he gets a lot of hate, but I think he's really good here. He's scary, and he has, like, a great physical presence, and he holds his own in scenes with Tom Cruise.
Yeah, I think I really have an issue. I see this happening a lot with actors, and it actually makes me, like, sad for them, because it's like, this is the career they chose, and then you know, you go through a couple bad movies and people, like, it seems like a lot of casting directors just see, like, you as the common denominator and be like, oh, this guy was the reason that it wasn't well. Like, Jai Courtney's been in several bad films, but I don't think the reason they were ever bad was necessarily because of him. And I know there's probably going to be a lot of people who disagree with me. I'm not saying he's, like, a phenomenal actor, but he was pretty good in this. Like, he was physically threatening in the scenes he was in, and, you know, He was really great in Suicide Squad. He was
Yeah, he was good in that too.
And so there was just I don't know, I think that
I think the problem is I don't know that he's a leading man material. Like when he was cast in Terminator, he doesn't even try to do anything that Michael Biehn did in the original Terminator film. But he's not really believable as this, like, almost feral, starved guy from the future. He just kind of plays it with a smirk. And he's kind of likable, but I don't know that he's a leading man. I think he's really good in these small side roles like he has here.
Yeah, I haven't seen Terminator Genesis. Maybe what I had said would change after I see that.
I don't think he's bad. He's just not great. You're fine without it. You don't need to bother with it. You're not missing much.
I could kind of tell from the trailer that I'm not, you know, jumping out of my seat to rush to see that one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, essentially the other main character, Rosamund Pike. Was this around the time that she started kind of being in more films? Because before this, I can't think of any major role.
She was in Pride and Prejudice in, like, 2005. A couple small roles here and there, but then she, like, with this and Gone Girl, she's kind of exploded now.
Yeah, and I think she's pretty good. Like, I haven't seen Gone Girl, but this is pretty much the only movie I've seen her in where she played, like, a significant role. But I think she did good. Like, she's very believable. She had, you know, she had good chemistry with Tom Cruise. But, I mean, I guess, as we pointed out, that's, you could probably just kind of put anybody on the screen and they'd end up having good chemistry with him.
You know, he has chemistry with the random guy on the bus. I mean,
yeah.
So, like, yeah, she's really believable. And they tease out the kind of will they, won't they possible romance really well. And they actually don't do it, which I really appreciate. It would have been so cliche. They had.
Yeah, I was, first time watching it, I was remembering, like, okay, guys, like, yes, we're going to have, like, a couple scenes of this, and then It'll show a picture of them or a scene of them going in a room, and we've all seen it coming. But then at the end, he just kind of leaves her after the climax. I was like, oh, they didn't. That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, and surprise, Robert Duvall and Werner Herzog are in this film. And Duvall's role is interesting because he's not introduced till pretty close, like the end of the second act. It does feel a little random that Reacher calls on him to fight in this random quarry, but I think Duvall plays the character so well, we just go along with it.
Yeah, Robert Duvall is honestly, like, he's one of my favorite actors. I like him in everything he's in.
Yeah.
And so I definitely agree with you. It kind of feels weird, and it's like, why did he call on him? Well, because they got Robert Duvall to play the character. That's why he called him.
Yeah, and he can shoot. But, we know he can shoot, basically. And I guess we established that he trusts and respects Reacher, kind of, mm-hmm. in their previous scene together. He was so good in The Judge, but he's getting up there. He's like mid-80s now.
Yeah, but I don't know. I still love him. I still liked him a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
He had some really good back and forth.
I hope he keeps acting for a while longer. And then Werner Herzog. It's so random. You think that he's in this random thriller as the villain. He's much better known as a legendary director, but he is terrifying in this movie. And I don't know if that's just, I think all they had to do is just put a fake eye on him and just have him talk in his normal voice, and he's terrifying. But the lines they give him and just how he's just always standing there menacing in the corner. It's really, really creepy, and I love it.
Yeah, they could have definitely just kind of gotten just whoever to fulfill the role of the villain. I think he was pretty good. I like that scene of him where he's talking about all of, like, what happened to his fingers and forcing the other guy to try to bite off. Oh, like, I cringed during that scene, and, you know, Jai Courtney's kind of off in the corner, but he's just staring at him, like, waiting for it to happen, like he knows it's not.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, like, I don't understand why they never do
this. Oh, it's the bullets. I don't understand. I can't do it.
It's so cold.
Yeah. That's like a perfect casting decision where it's basically the actor playing themselves, but it works so well. Have you seen any of Herzog's film?
I'm actually not familiar with him. So this is the only thing that I think that I've seen him in.
I think I've seen Rescue Dawn from him, which it's been a while. I wasn't terribly impressed when I saw it. He's like a kind of a living legend with the filmmaking. Probably should check out some more of his work.
I did see Rescue Dawn. I actually enjoyed that. I may have liked that one a lot just because I really love Christian Bale and Steve Zahn.
Uh-huh.
So actually, I may have seen several of his movies, just didn't know it was him.
Yeah, I also want to praise the action in this film. I mean, I think it's some of the best action scenes done in the last decade in American filmmaking. Just how Macquarie shoots it. He just pulls the camera back and just allows the actors to do their thing in front of the camera. And so many people in modern cinema think that you have to just constantly cut and just shake the camera around to create this artificial tension. But then when you see films like this, you realize, no, it's so much better just to have, I mean, you don't even have to move the camera. Just stick it on a tripod, and if you have good choreography, it's going to show.
I was about to bring up the choreography. Like, if you have a fight that's well choreographed and that's cool to look at, it's a shame to just shake the camera around, like you said, to try to, like, create this tension. In real life, if you're watching a fight, you're not shaking around. Like, it's plenty tense with you standing there watching it. So,
yeah.
The idea that, like, that the way you film an action scene, like, that you're not supposed to just be able to give the audience a clear view of what's going on. I don't know. I definitely like the action scenes in this movie.
Yeah, it's all easy to follow, and it's not overly choreographed. It's like a really straightforward, brutal street fighting style. And the hits, you feel every time somebody gets hit, you feel it hurts. And like even when Tom Cruise gets hurt in the film too. And that's really cool. So many action scenes, like, it take a half dozen punches to the face and it doesn't faze him. Like in the last fight with him and Jai Courtney, like they pound each other for about 5 seconds and they both kind of like fall to the ground and roll over. And they kind of have to stagger back to their feet. That's actually realistic to a fight of that type.
Yeah. And I remember in the scene where he was at Jeb's house and he's sitting in the bathroom and the two guys are walking in, and I'm like, you know, he's typical action movie. They're going to step on something. He's going to turn around. And no, he just gets hit in the back of the head with the baseball bat straight up and falls into a tub.
That shot's crazy because they hit the door jam, but that's like his back is to them. And I watched some of the special features of them trying to get that scene. And actually, one of the stunt guys did get hit in the head accidentally when they were setting up the blocking.
Oh, that's...
It's really cool. And, like, there are three kind of standout set pieces. And each one is different. They're all really unique in their style. Like, the first one's where he brawls the five guys in the street. And that's just really funny. And it's also intense because, he beats the crap out of them. He fights dirty. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is in this really tight space. And it makes great use of being in a confined space in the bathroom where the two guys, they're trying to get at him, but they're too overeager and they're knocking into each other.
Yeah, it was a surprisingly funny scene. I think it kind of went on for a bit long, but I thought it was well done. And I liked what happened when this third guy walks in and he's like, "You see those two guys over there? Do you want to see me again?" There are just a lot of good lines.
"Am I stealing your car? You can have it as long as you want." Yeah, just how he deals with the bad guys is really... it's humorous and it should believe it because of how well he plays the character. And then the final set piece is... I think it's kind of a masterpiece because you have... there's like six combatants and each one is like no closer than 100 feet from each other. And it takes place over a giant quarry... where there's two snipers, one on each side. He's driving a car down the middle, and there's two guys shooting at him. And yet you're never confused about where everybody is. The geography is laid out really clearly. You understand what's happening. And it's realistic, but also very intense. Just how it cuts back between the two snipers and the henchmen. And then how Reacher takes them out is also very believable.
Yeah, I think it's kind of refreshing to see. I did not really like it the first time. I thought it was an anticlimactic finale. And then the second time, I ended up liking it more. And I think the reason I didn't like it upon first viewing is just because with these action movies now, it's been a barrage of like over-the-top set pieces that are just completely unbelievable. And so to actually have something, like you said, there's never really a moment that's where I'm like, okay, that's a bit much. Like, the rear view camera gets shot out and he hits a rock, you know?
Yeah.
It felt very real. And then, you know, Robert Duvall wasn't just like peeking over for a split second and hitting everybody like point blank or not point blank, but you know, getting headshots. He was really just trying to keep them down. And he was like firing in the air just to scare. Like it felt like how it would probably play out realistically as opposed to like just an action film, the way they want it to look.
Yeah, that was interesting how you could tell most of the shots they were firing, they weren't actually firing to hit, which is more realistic. They're just kind of giving general cover. It's a very interesting way of shooting an action scene. And I kind of like the setup and payoff of having her files in the back of the car. Like it's just a throwaway line in the middle of the film, and then it's important later on. Because so many scenes in cars where they'll be driving a car through the city and people are shooting machine guns at them, and they might knock out a window, but they never hit the people inside. It's kind of funny they actually thought of that and gave an answer. Because a car doesn't stop a bullet. A bullet would go right through any car.
Yeah, so for once, the fact that he drove down to the end and didn't get hit was actually believable.
Yeah. And also, I think like the setup and payoff of the character of Sandy. She could have so easily been just this throwaway hot girl. But they actually cast a really good actress.
Yeah.
And she's believable as this kind of hurt girl who's stuck in over her head and with bad people and doesn't know how to get out of it. And they make you care and sympathize with her because of the actress. And so it's believable when they murder her to get at Reacher. And that's like where he goes completely cold. And he wants to kill these people after that just because they killed this innocent girl for no reason.
Not to sound cold, but typically like in an action movie when just a kind of a side character gets killed off, I'm usually not fazed. It's like, oh, you know, they weren't important to the plot. Oh, well. And so in this one, whenever Jai Courtney, I was like, whenever he sees her and he starts up the conversation, it's so obvious that, you know, she's dead at this point. And so whenever that happened, I'm like, oh, man, they actually kind of made this a pretty sympathetic character.
Yeah, and they're able to make her where she is kind of an airhead as a character, but you still care about her. It's weird. Like, most when you have the stupid party girl, you can't wait for them to die in these movies. But they kind of subverted that trope by making her feel like a real human being.
Yeah, kind of like as if she understands that that's her role. Like, this is just who I gotta be.
Yeah, you really sympathize with her plight. And then when he has the phone conversation, and you can tell he obviously wants to get rescue Rosamund Pike, but also he wants to basically avenge her. And how he's threatening Jai Courtney.
Yeah,
I love how the tables turn in that scene where they're calling to threaten him,
and it's the other way around by the end of it.
Yeah, and then there's like this just sense of dread and like inevitability. As he's slowly taking out the guys, and they keep cutting back to David Oyelowo and Herzog in the trailer, and they're like looking at each other, and you just know it's coming, as they keep sending out more guys and he keeps killing them.
Yeah, it was very entertaining to watch, and not just like, I mean, this is to me, it's just another praise of the movie. Like, there's a lot of movies that I describe as entertaining that just aren't, like, they're not well made, but mm-hmm. in this, it's like, this was an entertaining set piece that was well made. Like, it had somebody who knew what they were doing with the camera,
yeah,
and with their choreography.
Yeah, I mean,
and so
sorry, go on.
I was just gonna say, I still don't understand. Like you said, like the 61%. I don't think the movie is a masterpiece, but I think it's a competently made action movie with a lot of scenes that just could have. There's so many points in this movie that could have just been over the top.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those films where there's not really much substance going on. It's kind of a pure pulp, just pulpy entertainment. And I think there's this idea with critics that since the story wasn't all that original and there's not much substance, that somehow it's less of a film. And I just don't buy that. I think one of the most difficult films to make is a well-crafted popular entertainment film, to where you can make a film that satisfies every level of film craft, but also can entertain a wide audience. That's not easy to do. I mean, Pixar has kind of perfected it, and you see it every now and then, but it's actually very rare to see a well-crafted action film that is actually entertaining for everyone.
Yeah. To me, this has kind of happened more recently because, I mean, there was a time where, like, if a really quality action movie came out among other just kind of bland ones, it would get recognition. Like, I mean, the one that just comes to my mind instantly was Die Hard. Like, it came out in a sea of just cheesy action movies, and then one that's well made comes out.
Yeah.
And they acknowledged it. Whereas now it seems, unless there's some sort of hook, like, I mean, because Edge of Tomorrow is an action movie, but it's a sci-fi action movie that has a kind of, you know, not to use the word gimmick, but like, it has something different to hook you in. So I think that was probably part of the reason that people really liked it a lot. But if you're just going to be a straightforward action movie these days, it seems like, I mean, you might as well forget, you know, getting good reviews.
Yeah.
Because regardless of, I don't know, whether you do, like, you film it really well and put all the right actors, it's most likely just going to be written off as just a dumb action movie.
Yeah, I think with recent films, the scripts are really overlooked, to where there's a lot of lazy, dumb conveniences and just the stories aren't terribly well told, but they'll have good action, so they get a pass. And this one, the story, it's not terribly original, but it moves and it ebbs and flows, and there's a lot of great setups and payoffs throughout, and to where it keeps you constantly on edge and constantly connected with the story. It doesn't get the credit for that, especially, I think, having solid action, but also having a really decent story to go along with it.
Yeah, and I think before we move on to, like, maybe some of the things that we didn't like too much about it, one of the last things that I really wanted to talk about that I really liked about this was the detective work he did. It felt like it was done by an intelligent person, but it didn't feel unrealistic. Like, it was just simple lines, like whenever she said, "I work at the hardware store," and he says, well, she said the hardware store, implying, like, that's the one, like, everybody thinks of it. It's like, so what stands out to you as the hardware store?
And any other film would have just had him cut directly to the hardware store.
Yeah.
And this one, he actually has to do the legwork. And, I mean, ultimately, the film, it is a pure wish fulfillment fantasy where you got the one guy who's going to get justice done no matter what. But it toes the line so well between realism and this kind of fantasy it exists in that you really buy it and go along with it.
Yeah. The other moment that I was thinking of as well was, it was the end, whenever he says, no one would have thought about dumping the parking meter, like checking the coins, not even I would.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I mean, come to think of it, that's actually kind of true.
Yeah.
So the idea like that, that's something that he noticed. It was just little, like they gave the audience a clue and they said, well, we know we got his fingerprints from this. And the audience was like, oh, I guess they're just doing police work. And then at the end, he's like, that's even like,
yeah. And that, and
that's just, I don't buy that. And I was like, oh, wow.
And that doesn't even come out of nowhere, because he mentions it like twice previously in the film, just kind of setting up how he has his doubts about that one element. And like just the setup and payoff is so good in this film. In all these little scenes, they'll just leave these seeds that matter later on and actually kind of advance the story. Oh, yeah. We didn't even talk about the car chase.
Oh, that's right.
That scene is incredible. I mean, it's shot in these long, wide takes. And as I said, you could tell Tom Cruise is driving. And there's just one really cool scene where he comes out of the tunnel and spins out into this these sandboxes. And it was a mistake because the car stalled out. Originally, he was supposed to just hit that and drive off. But the car stalls out. And there's this split second where he kind of breaks character and looks at the camera, but then he snaps back into character and tries to start it again. It's really, I mean, you'd never see it if you didn't know, but it's a really fun kind of Easter egg if you know what happened behind the scenes there.
I'm going to have to go back and watch it just for that. I didn't notice it.
Yeah, the special features are pretty cool, especially for the car chase. Yeah, it's a long, but it's really beautifully shot and intense, where he's trying to chase the bad guys while the cops are chasing him, like he's playing these cat and mouse games down alleys, and then the ending is hilarious.
Yeah,
it's so anticlimactic.
I think that's one of the reasons I don't like the trailer. I don't know. I don't like it when you take scenes that are really, really good and you show them in the trailer, because that was one of the scenes that worked really well for me.
Yeah, there's no dialogue. It's just like pure visual comedy. He just gets out of the car, stands at the bus stop. And the whole crowd just kind of looks at him. They look at the cops. They look at the other helicopter. And they kind of just move in around him and hand him a hat. And then at the end where they're just sitting beside each other in the bus smirking. It's just so funny. And it feels so real. They feel like real people.
Yeah, like the guy sitting next to him. I mean, it's so obvious on his face. Like, he's got like this kind of the smile of satisfaction. Like, he just helped this guy out. Like, and it, I don't know, it was really, like, visual comedy is done in a lot of ways not very well in a lot of movies. So to just have a scene that's funny like that in this action movie, I liked it a lot. It was probably one of my favorite scenes of the movie, that and the phone call.
Yeah. And I know I mentioned it before, but I really got to praise Herzog in this role. He is so freaking creepy. And I like how they set him up as the survivor, as this guy who will do anything to survive. And in the end, it looks like he's going to get away with it. And Tom Cruise just shoots him.
That came, like, I think that came out of nowhere. Like, and I really liked it. The idea that, you know, the hero, like, I've never understood that in movies. It happens so many times where it's like a hero will kill, like, so many henchmen, and then they'll get to the end and they'll act like they're, like, being, like, this kind of righteous hero, like, no, the law deserves you. And it's like, what about the other, like, 50 guys you killed?
Yeah.
But in this, it's like, he gets there and he's like, you're not surviving this time.
Yeah, because, like, Herzog has this whole monologue about how he's not going down with it. He's going to survive. He shoots him. I mean, I guess it's probably not the right thing to do, but it works well for the character.
It's a way to tie up loose ends, and I don't know. It was a satisfying ending to what they had established with that character.
Yeah, and all the horrific things this guy had done, he deserved it.
Yeah, it's a way to kill him in a way that works for the character, and then, I mean, you're killing a character that the audience doesn't really care dies. They're more than okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the funny scene in the end where after they rescue Pike, where they're talking, and this would be the scene where they were kissing in the other film, and then Robert Duvall standing in the corner is like, get her number, we gotta go.
Yeah. I love Robert Duvall.
Yeah, he plays the grumpy old man really well.
So are there anything, I mean, clearly you and I both like this movie a lot. Are there any things that you're not a fan of about this movie?
There's just one element. It's kind of large, but the plan of the villains is a little weird, and I understand a bit of it. They're kind of riding the system and stealing land and kind of stealing public funds by building with like public grants. It's kind of weird and complex, and it's not all that important to the actual story what their plan is. And so it did feel a little confusing the first two times I watched it about what all is going on with them. Yeah, I think maybe if they had been a little bit more clear about what the villains were after, it would have helped the film out a little bit.
Yeah, that's one that I have here as well. To me, the plan itself wasn't worthy of the villain that it got.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, it's not very clear to the audience what's going on. I mean, I remember the scene where Pike is telling her dad, like about the company, what's going on. And I mean, it suffices for the movie, but I still think it could have been more clear.
When you have two villains that imposing and that they're willing to do this level of horrific things to get away with it, real estate fraud is kind of boring.
Yeah. You'd think that what they're doing, I don't know. I mean, maybe one could say like, oh, no, it's kind of cool. Like this is, you know, you've got these kind of villains doing more of a real life kind of crime, but I don't know. It's still an action movie enough. I wanted a cooler plan.
Yeah. And that's like literally my only dislike. I think everything else is pretty much perfect in this film.
One of the things, I wasn't a fan of the way they killed off David Oyelowo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think is. I mean, I don't need every villain to be like some sort of like climactic kind of death, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I ended up really disliking him because of that, that I wanted more of just a quick turn through the door shot, like shoot him in the face and move on and not really address him.
I kind of like that, how he just shoots him and just walks by, and like Rosamund Pike just really quietly hands him his gun.
Yeah, oh, that was good.
Yeah, I think with Jai Courtney suffered enough for both of them.
That's true.
Where they're both standing there, and you hear Jai Courtney screaming off in the distance, and you just kind of like, you almost start to sympathize for them, just how you know he's coming and nothing will stop him.
Jai Courtney's end was a lot more satisfying for me.
Yeah, he's gonna beat him to death and drink his blood from a boot.
Yep.
I love that line. Do you have any other dislikes?
Not really. A lot of it is kind of predictable, but I can't even really bring myself to make that a con. I don't think every action movie has, like, I mean, especially given that we kind of were talking about how one of the pros was it's very straightforward with the audience and it doesn't try to, like, pretend it's got this mystery. So, I mean, you can kind of see a lot coming. But then again, I guess it's not as predictable as a lot of other movies because I didn't see him just pulling a gun on the main villain and shooting him in the face. Like, so it did enough new things and enough things that I didn't really, that I couldn't see coming beforehand to where I would necessarily really put predictable as a con.
Yeah, I think it does enough with the storytelling and execution where you don't need the gimmick of some kind of something else outside of just the story it is. It knows what it is, and it does it really, really well. And I think, I don't think films like that are appreciated enough. Yeah, original films are great, but I think the films that really stand the test of time are the ones that just pick a story and tell it really, really well without trying to be something hugely original or not. I mean, yeah, you'll always have your Star Wars, but you'll also, like Die Hard, there's nothing particularly original about that film. It's just all in the execution of how it's done. I definitely think films like this will be looked on a lot more fondly and with more perspective, without whatever kind of bad buzz around Tom Cruise or.
Mm-hmm.
And an old film doesn't have to stand up to this originality test that every single new film has to stand up to for some reason. It's really weird now. how it seems like everybody, with every film, they always want these original concepts, and they really don't exist anymore. Even the most original films, like Edge of Tomorrow, it's just a reworking of a story that's already been told a dozen times.
Yeah, I think it's just we've gotten this kind of idea. We have so many sequels and so many remakes and so many action movies where it's like a movie is written off before it comes out. So when you have a remake come out, you know, people are instantly going to dismiss it. And I mean, yeah, by and large, the remakes these days have been less than stellar.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to hold that against a movie just because it's not this original idea. You know, not every movie is going to be Memento. Not every movie is going to be... and even Memento is, it's kind of a play on Christopher Nolan's first movie, The Following.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's definitely not, it's not as good as Memento, but I mean, the idea of telling a story from, in a lot of ways, backwards to front.
Okay.
Just not as well executed. But yeah, like this idea that everything has to be, you know, like, oh, I've never seen this in a movie before. I don't know, sometimes it's fun to go and just see a really well done action movie. Because, I mean, action movies come out every other week, I feel like. So whenever one comes out that actually has good writing and cool set pieces and is filmed well, I don't know, I think it's worth pointing out.
Yeah, I think just simple films with solid film craft are quite rare. And I really appreciate when one comes out that actually is very good. Sci-fi blockbusters are awesome, but you don't need that to be exciting. What are your thoughts on the sequel? You looking forward to that one?
I'm looking forward to it, but I hate the name.
Yeah, it's cheesy, I think. They got a different director, and that does worry me a little because so much of what I loved about this film is wrapped up in the direction. But Ed Zwick, he's got a solid filmography, and the trailer it looks very visually appealing. Maybe a bit too much action, I don't know. I mean, they made the first one look like an action film in the trailers too, so it might just be a couple scenes. It does look really exciting, and Tom Cruise is always like a must-see for me, so I'm excited for it.
I think the reason that I'm not too worried about it is because, and then, you know, like, trailers can be a little bit misleading, but just based on the trailer, to me it looks pretty consistent with this one in terms of the directing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the visual style is kind of pretty similar.
Yeah, so, and then I think, you know, it's a Tom Cruise production. Like, he's producing his own movies. He's gotten to the point where I feel like he really feels personal attachments to all of his projects now. Like, he's very, emotionally invested in, you know, the Mission Impossible series, and I think that's starting to be the case with Jack Reacher. So, I don't know.
And he's also always fully committed to his roles, and even in his roles where his acting isn't particularly good, I wasn't a huge fan of him in, like, The Last Samurai, but he's still, pouring his heart and soul into it and giving a really intense performance every time. And do you listen to podcasts much?
I listen to a few.
There's one called The Nerdist. Not The Nerdist, sorry. Q&A by Jeff Goldsmith. He does these interviews with directors and writers, and there was one, actually one on Jack Reacher and one on Mission Impossible 5, and it talks about just how involved Tom Cruise is in this, because he produces most of his films nowadays. Like, he's actually involved from the very first, like, conception to the writing, and he also, like, a lot of the action scenes are, like, actually his idea. Like, he's completely involved throughout the films, and, like, totally committed to the idea, and I really respected him a lot more after listening to that one. He wants to always make the best possible product, no matter what film he's making. And he just gives every film his all.
Yeah, I think the hate on Tom Cruise, it's really unwarranted. Like, yeah, I think a lot of it is because, you know, in his early career, he was in a lot, like, different kind of movies. Like, he was in, you know, you had Jerry Maguire, you had A Few Good Men. You got these movies that aren't necessarily just, like, action movies where it's a lot more about his performance. And then whenever he decided to start doing action movies, they're like, oh, well, whatever, now he's just an action star. It's like, well, I mean, he's an action star in good movies, though. So,
yeah, the best kind of action star.
You know, nobody's mad at other people who have always kind of been action stars. They're like, oh, that's who that is. Like, well, Tom Cruise can become one of those if he wants, and I think he's done it well, so.
Yeah, I mean, if Tom Cruise is on the poster, it's like, it will almost automatically make me go see it. Do you have any other thoughts before we close?
Not really. Just I'm looking forward to the sequel. Hopefully it's as good as this one.
Yeah, me too.
Hopefully it'll be better received.
Yeah, well, we are actually finally on iTunes, which that's pretty exciting. I got the acceptance email, and so we should be up and available by the time this goes out.
Yeah, I'm excited that we're on iTunes now. That's it's pretty cool to say that you have a podcast on iTunes. Yeah, it sounds very, very formal, very like it's a real thing now. We're gonna be doing our next episode over a movie that I actually like a whole lot that I think it's kind of more just guilt by association.
Yeah.
It's Revenge of the Sith. To me, it's easily the best of the prequels.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to talk about that movie and why I think it's actually really good.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but I always enjoyed that one a lot more than the others. You know, I think it gets more hate than it deserves. And be looking forward to that episode next week. And if you want to find us, we will be on iTunes very, very soon as Underrated Podcast. We are also on Facebook as Underrated Podcast. We'd love it if you'd come and join us there. And if you want to comment or suggest a film. And we have a website, underratedpodcast.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at underrated_pod. And if you want to email us, if you have any comments or, you know, suggestions even, we are theunderratedpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep, and I am on Facebook as Gabriel Green. Send me a friend request if you want. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, would you give us a rating and review on iTunes? That helps people find us. If you haven't seen Jack Reacher in a while, go check it out again. It's a good film.
Well, I enjoyed making our third official episode of this podcast. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
Remember back to your early teachings. All who gain power are afraid to lose it, even the Jedi.
The Jedi use their power for good.
Good is a point of view, Anakin. The Sith and the Jedi are similar in almost every way, including their quest for greater power.
The Sith rely on their passion for their strength. They think inwards, only about themselves.
And the Jedi don't.